Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking closely at a specific report. It's a Social Analysis System 2 Empowerment Diagnostic for Xochicalco de Hidalgo.
Yes, Xochicalco de Hidalgo in Veracruz, Mexico. And it's a really interesting place for this kind of analysis.
Why is that? What makes it stand out?
Well, it's got this unique context, you see. It's a predominantly Totonac community. We're talking like 91% indigenous.
Okay.
And it's in the northern Sierra Totonaca region, which is an ecotourism zone. Connectivity is, well, moderate.
And how do people mainly make a living there?
Mostly agriculture, traditional crafts are big, tourism, obviously, and also remittances play a role.
Got it. So agriculture, crafts, tourism, remittances, a specific mix. Now, this report, it gets straight to a key finding. Doesn't it?
It does. Right off the bat, it gives Xochicalco de Hidalgo a fuzzy Bayesian empowerment index. Let's call it FBEI score.
And that score is?
It's 4.85 out of 10.
4.85. Wow. Okay. And the report categorizes that as?
High risk category for empowerment.
High risk. So that's a pretty stark number. It tells us there are significant challenges.
Exactly. And to really, you know, unpack what that number means, the report looks at empowerment through five different angles or axes.
Right. What are those?
They are agency, political voice, socioeconomic autonomy, education, and finally, health and bodily integrity.
Okay, five key areas. Yeah. So our mission for this deep dive is basically to explore each of these, understand the details behind that 4.85 score in this specific Totonac community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Using the report's data.
Precisely. We want to get into the nuances based on what the report found and what it recommends.
Okay, let's start with the first one then, agency. The report gives this a score of 0.57, also high risk.
Yes, same category as the overall score, high risk.
So when we talk about agency here, what are we actually seeing on the ground for Totonac women?
Well, it's interesting. There's a bit of a contrast. The report clearly states that Totonac women are, you know, very active.
Active how?
In craft production, that's huge there. Also central to festivals, community caregiving. They're really visible, and there's some emerging involvement in ecotourism and starting businesses, too.
Okay, so they're involved, visible, contributing. Where does the high-risk rating come from, then? What's missing?
That's the core issue. While they are active in those ways, their formal agency is limited, especially when it comes to big decisions about land and local governance.
So a disconnect between cultural participation and actual decision-making power.
Exactly that. Think about it. Visible in culture, crafts, even some business, but maybe not having an equal say in, say, how communal land is managed or how municipal resources are allocated. That visibility doesn't automatically mean power.
That makes a lot of sense. It's a critical distinction. What does the report suggest to address this policy-wise?
It has a few key recommendations. One is intercultural entrepreneurship training, specifically for women in tourism and crafts, build on what they're already doing.
Okay, empowering them economically within their existing roles.
Right. Another is promoting community dialogues focused on gender justice, even within cultural and ceremonial life. Sort of examining traditions through a gender lens.
That sounds potentially challenging but necessary.
It could be. And thirdly, establishing women's platforms specifically for monitoring local budgets and public services, giving them a tool for oversight.
Interesting. So practical training, community conversations, and tools for accountability. It highlights that tension you mentioned, visibility versus formal power. Let's move to political voice. That scored a bit higher, 0.60, putting it in moderate risk.
Yeah, slightly better, but still flagged as a risk.
What's the picture here regarding women's political participation?
There are some positive signs. The report notes women are getting more consultative roles, particularly on committees related to culture and tourism. So their opinions are being sought in some specific areas.
Consultative roles.
Yeah.
That sounds like a step, but maybe not full participation. The moderate risk suggests there are still hurdles.
Precisely. Significant barriers remain. The report is quite specific here. Barriers within ejido assemblies.
The communal land ownership councils.
Exactly those. Very important bodies in rural Mexico. And also barriers within traditional party-based governance structures. So in the core areas of land decisions and formal politics, major obstacles persist.
That mention of the ejido assemblies is really specific. What kind of barriers might women face there? Is it about tradition or?
It can be a mix of things. Long-standing patriarchal norms, perhaps, where men have traditionally dominated land discussions, maybe issues with getting information or just not having their voices carry the same weight in those settings. Traditional power structures can be very resistant to change, you know?
Understood. So what does the report recommend to boost their political voice?
Well, one idea is institutionalizing gender quotas, but, and this is key, with follow-up mechanisms, especially in local economic councils.
So not just getting women in the door, but making sure they can actually participate effectively.
Exactly. The follow-up is crucial. It's about support, resources, making sure their input leads to action. The report also talks about developing participatory planning processes that deliberately include Totonac women's perspectives.
Makes sense. And anything else?
Yes. Training younger women in skills like public communication and how to design municipal projects, building that capacity for future leadership.
Right. Building the pipeline, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving from just being consulted to having real decision-making influence, let's shift to socioeconomic autonomy. Score,
okay.
0.62. Also, moderate risk.
Mm-hmm. Another moderate risk area.
What does this tell us about women's economic independence or control over resources?
So the report acknowledges women are generating income through embroidery, food production, tourism-related work. They're economically active.
Okay, they're contributing economically. Why moderate risk then? What's holding back their autonomy?
The issue here fundamentally is unequal access. Access to key resources needed for real autonomy.
Like what?
The report points specifically to credit, markets, and land ownership. So women might be producing goods, but face more difficulty than men in getting loans to grow a business, or accessing broader markets to sell their products, or, critically, owning the land they rely on.
Ah, I see. So you can be working hard, earning money, but if you don't have equal access to finance, markets, or ownership, that autonomy is quite fragile.
Precisely. It limits their ability to scale up, secure their livelihoods long term, and build wealth independently.
So what are the suggestions to tackle this?
The recommendations focus on leveling that playing field. Things like facilitating women's access to local ecotourism cooperatives and different funding sources.
Connecting them to existing structures.
Yes. And also making sure credit programs are actually designed for the kind of work women often do, maybe informal, maybe seasonal rural work, not just standard business loans.
Adapting financial tools to their reality.
Exactly. And perhaps the biggest one for long-term autonomy. Implementing municipal policies that actively promote shared land ownership for women, giving them that asset base.
Right. Ownership provides that foundation. Okay, let's turn to education. This one scores higher, 0.78. Still moderate risk, but closer to adequate. Sounds a bit more positive.
It is, relatively speaking. The report does highlight progress here. We're seeing increasing completion rates for girls in basic education and even in upper secondary education.
So more girls are staying in school longer. That's definitely good news.
Absolutely. It's a positive trend.
But it's still moderate risk.
Yeah.
So there must be a catch or another layer to it.
There is. And it's a really important nuance. While access is improving, the content of the education is lacking something crucial.
Lacking what?
Representation. The report points out that Totonac language and their own cultural knowledge are underrepresented in the school curricula.
Ah, okay. So they're getting schooling, but it might not fully reflect or value their own specific cultural background.
Exactly. It's about the quality and relevance, not just access. If the education doesn't connect with their identity, their language, their history, their culture, it might feel alienating or less empowering than it could be.
That's a critical point. Education isn't just about attendance figures. What does the report suggest here?
It suggests developing intercultural education centers, potentially with women taking leadership roles, where Totonac knowledge is central.
Creating dedicated spaces.
Mm-hmm. Also, providing scholarships for Indigenous girls to study things like tourism, business, or pedagogy fields where they can become leaders and bring that perspective back.
Investing in future leaders.
And fundamentally integrating Totonac history, oral traditions, and importantly, the contributions of Totonac women into the regular school content, making the standard curriculum more relevant.
Right. Making their own culture part of their formal learning. Okay. Final axis, health and bodily integrity. This scores highest at 0.87 adequate risk. That sounds pretty good, relatively.
It does. The report indicates that general health services are relatively accessible in the community.
Okay.
And it also highlights that traditional midwives are respected and play an important role, which is seen as a strength.
Good access to basic services,
mm-hmm.
respect for traditional practices like midwifery. So why isn't it low risk? What's the issue keeping it from being fully adequate?
The critical gap identified here is the lack of strong, or sometimes any, mechanisms to address gender-based violence.
So general health care might be okay, but specific support for survivors of violence is weak or missing.
That's exactly it. Basic services are there, but the specialized support protection, and justice pathways for women experiencing violence are insufficient.
That's a major gap. Even if other health indicators look okay, it significantly impacts well-being and empowerment.
Absolutely. And the recommendations focus squarely on this. Creating intercultural shelters for survivors, staffed by people who speak Totonac and understand the cultural context.
Culturally appropriate support.
Yes. Also, training health workers in trauma-informed care and culturally specific approaches to gender issues. And using local communication channels, music, festivals, radio for campaigns promoting gender equality and challenging violence.
Using traditional means to promote change. Okay. So looking across all five areas, it's a really complex picture, isn't it? Strengths and progress alongside some really deep-seated challenges. The report also had some cross-cutting recommendations.
It did. Recommendations that kind of tie these different areas together. One big one is about integrating empowerment goals directly into tourism and cultural initiatives.
Oh, so.
Essentially, making sure women aren't just participants, but are recognized as central figures in heritage preservation and the local economy. Making sure they benefit directly and have a say in how culture and tourism develop.
Leveraging existing assets, but ensuring equity. Makes sense. What else?
Advancing what it calls institutional parity. This goes beyond just quotas. It's about ensuring women's input genuinely shapes policies, especially around things like land use, which we saw was a sticking point.
So meaningful participation, not just presence.
Exactly. And finally, it reiterates the need to strengthen the response to gender-based violence as a priority across the board. Protection, justice, culturally appropriate services.
Okay. So pulling it all back together, that overall score, the FBEI of 4.85 out of 10, high risk. It really reflects this complex mix, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Zocalco de Hidalgo clearly has this vibrant culture. There are emerging opportunities, particularly in education and the economy, but
empowerment is held back.
Significantly held back, according to this report. By exclusion from formal power, unequal access to land and credit, gaps in culturally relevant education, and inadequate responses to violence. That high-risk label is a serious indicator.
It really is. And it makes you think, listening to this, how interconnected everything is. Progress in education is great, but if it doesn't translate to more agency or economic autonomy,
and this impact is blunted, yeah.
And that challenge of celebrating culture, yeah, while also addressing potential inequalities within it, that's tricky ground to navigate.
It's incredibly complex. How do you foster change respectfully within a strong cultural context?
So maybe a final thought for our listeners to chew on. Given this picture, the cultural strengths, the economic activity, but also these clear disparities in power and access, what might be the most crucial first step for sustainable change in a place like Zocalco de Hidalgo, based on everything we've discussed from this report?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Where do you start to make the biggest difference? It's certainly something to reflect on.